Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, who show is this?
But yeah, what do you think of the point that I was making, essentially, that I think the Lakers can improve a ton organically and then over the course of the season, I do think they'll kind of lighten up on their stance on the first rounder once they get into the season. We know Rob Pelinka doesn't like to enter a season without a first rounder in his pocket, so I never anticipated they were going to move that first round pick. But if they had that first rounder and Dalton and I guess the arrow could potentially be moved over the course of the season, then you have that expiring money. I actually think that the Lakers could address some of the issues that remain on this roster and really get better. But I think the biggest way or the biggest step forward that they have to take this year is offensively by way of Luka, LeBron, and Austin interacting at all on that side of the ball.
You know, it's tricky. I've seen people say like, oh, well, why aren't they running more LeBron Luka two-man game? Because it's going to get switched. It's the same thing that happened with LeBron and Anthony Davis. Both LeBron and Luka dictate similar perimeter defenders, big, strong athletes. That's what they dictate, right? And so I think like three-man action's a way to make switching more complicated. You incorporate a guy like Austin in action with them. And they did some of this over the course of the of that end of the season, just not as much as I'd like to see, but I think that there's potential there. But yeah, like you're not going to just be able to run LeBron, Luka ball screens and get a bunch of advantages out of it. Teams are just going to switch. I think the biggest thing that I keep an eye on is catch and shoot shooting, specifically with Austin. LeBron actually shot pretty well off the catch in the postseason, and that's why he kind of maintained a good amount of offensive utility. I thought a big part of why Austin had a rough playoff series is because he has not been able to connect his off the dribble shooting with his catch and shoot jump shooting. He's been very streaky there. And like, I think, you know, in terms of like,
he gets sped up a lot.
Like yeah.
It's like a tick less on his jumper. Cause he's the kind of shooter where like the ball has to go back on the platter. Right. And it takes just a little bit longer. And I think in the postseason, everybody's closing out so much harder that it really speeds them up just that much more in the postseason.
It's not entirely uncommon for ball handlers to struggle to shoot off the catch. They're two very different processes. Shooting off the dribble is about fluidity. Shooting off the catch is about muscle memory. Like shooting off the catch is doing the same exact damn thing every single time. Shooting off the dribble is about connecting the dribble to the shot. It's and footwork to the shot. And so it's a little bit more about fluidity, which Austin is great at in that respect. But there are ways to connect to the two, and there are guys who can successfully do both. It just takes an enormous amount of work. And by the way, I'm not over here acting like I'm preaching at Austin. I know Austin knows this.
Yeah.
I know this is Austin's goal this offseason. I haven't talked to him, but I guarantee you if I texted his agent and was like, hey, what's Austin working on this summer? Aaron would be like, he's working on catch and shoot, jump shooting. Like, I know that's what he's working on. He's too competitive. He knows what he needs to do to succeed off of Luka. But to me, it's a little bit of that three-man action. It's a little bit about Austin in particular improving off the catch. I even think LeBron could improve a little. LeBron was a little streaky off the catch towards the tail end of the season. I think the third piece of it is pace, because I think the upside that comes with having lots of offensive skill, the upside of having not just play finishers off of Luka, but dudes that can hoop, like guys that are bucket getters like LeBron, like Austin, like Rui Hachimura, even Marcus Smart. The upside there is getting the advantage early in the possession and letting those guys actually utilize their ability to attack off the catch. and to continue to further the advantage and get fantastic looks. And the one way you can prevent that advantage from manifesting is by walking the ball up the court and not getting into that advantage until too late in the shot clock. And so I think it's going to be a big part of JJ's goal in training camp is getting them to play a little bit faster, but then also leaning into Luka. Like, Luka's the second best advantage creator in the entire NBA behind Jokic, in my opinion. Like, yeah. He's that good. So every minute he's on the floor, it makes sense for him to be making the first decision. But if he makes that decision earlier in the possession, it will prevent Austin and LeBron from getting good out point. Of rhythm in the process. I think that's going to be that third piece of it.
Yeah, one of the things I'm actually really excited about this upcoming year is you have Ayton is a volume rebounder. You have Luka, who's a really good rebounder for his position and size. And you have LeBron, who's one of the all-time rebounders ever. And I think at least defensively, the Lakers should be able to rebound well enough to get out in transition more frequently than they did last year. And I think that will, if it doesn't lead to, you know, an uptick in transition points, that, to your point a second ago, gets them into their offense that much faster, and doesn't allow teams to really just kind of play volleyball on them the way that Minnesota was by the end of that series. So you do or you do not have the Lakers as contenders right now?
So, I mean, I think all seven of those teams are contenders. Mm-hmm. I think that you could talk at least two teams out east into contender. I think both Cleveland and New York could be contenders. I think it's a fine line between top tier and second tier. I think I talked about this on my show this morning. I view this Lakers team as extremely high variance. Like, again, to put it very simply, if Luka comes in and has a revenge MVP campaign, and LeBron reaches second team All-NBA level, and Austin improves as a catch-and-shoot player, and Marcus Smart is healthy, the guy that we saw in Boston a couple years ago, or even in Memphis when he was healthy. When Marcus was healthy in Memphis, they were good.
Yeah.
And if DeAndre Ayton in a contract year is focused and healthy and plays to his capability, if all five of those things happen, they are a top-tier contender, in my opinion. It's just such a thin track that they have to walk to get there. From there, I think if they make an aggressive move to add a sixth starter, really a seventh starter if you count Rui, basically just another reliable rotation piece, something that preferably slots Marcus Smart off the bench, something like that, I think is what would push them into a bona fide top-tier contender the way that I view Denver as in Oklahoma City and Houston.
Yeah. Essentially, to whittle that down, and I don't want to speak for you, but the Lakers need to limit their ifs. They need to find a way over the course of the year to cut that number of ifs down, because that's a scary number of ifs, right? And look, some of that stuff is going to be figured out really quickly. We're going to look at Luka, and we're going to be like, okay, that if is taken care of, right? We're going to see him on opening night, and if he looks like he has one visible ab, perfect, awesome. All right, that if is taken care of. I think we're also going to learn pretty quickly about the way that Luka and LeBron are kind of going to work together this year. I think we'll know that pretty quickly, because that's something that it's either going to be there or it won't. And then the other stuff, right? What kind of a season DeAndre Ayton has over the course of the year, we won't know until next April, you know, and whether or not Marcus Smart is going to be able to remain healthy, that's another one that we won't know until way later in the year, or if the Lakers are able to kind of supplement themselves with some talent there. The other if factor here, I think, also is Vando, because I think this team is still a little soft in terms of, you know, physicality and motor and all that stuff. And if Vando is playable again, if he becomes a playable NBA guy again, that helps with some of that stuff and extends the rotation a little bit. And we'll see there. I know there are people, I always get asked, you know, well, what about Maxey? What if Maxey's able to be their stretch five? He's had a fork stuck in him for a couple of years. I don't really see that with him. All right, let's segue really quickly over to the Kobe stuff, which, again, I think it was Bleacher Report. And I feel like these lists come out earlier every year. Like, we're still in July. There are still like viable free agents there. We're talking about top 100 ever. But I saw that the Kobe's list comes out. And my theory on this has always been, and I want to start macro and we'll go specifically into Kobe here in a second. I've been creating content for like 12 years, I would say, maybe 13. I don't even know. And one of the rules that I learned really, really quickly is that if you make content that pisses Lakers fans off, it always traffics well because Lakers people, Lakers fans are going to click on it and hate click on it, but they'll click on it. Click's worth a click. And then, you know, people around the league, especially, you know, people who root for these other teams are going to click on it because they like seeing the Lakers get crapped on. So I think that's kind of the starting point. And I feel like Kobe is the lightning rod of that. And he's always been kind of like he's always been polarizing and he'll always be polarizing. But I think he is polarization weaponized in this regard. And so when I see him like out of a top 10, especially at 11, which is right out of the top 10, it's in that spot where the person who makes that list or the people who make that list can be like, what? He's one spot out of the top 10. What's wrong? And I wish if people were actually going to say what they were going to say about Kobe, they'd say it with their chests. You know, like I saw T-Mac try to say that, you know, if he had Shaq, that this and that and the other. And it's like, no, man, you didn't defend at Kobe's level. And that's kind of what I wanted to intro into this conversation. You did a really good job of kind of contextualizing the inefficiency, because that always seems to be the knock on Kobe. But to me, when I talk about Kobe or when I put him in those lists or tiers or whatever, however we want to frame it, to me, it starts on defense. In that, like, how many all-time great players, especially now, we don't see it anymore now because most of these offensive engines are hidden to a certain extent. But Kobe was still at the tail end of that era where your best player not only was the driving force of your offense, but also matched up against the other team's best offensive player. And, you know, I know a lot of people like to say, well, Kobe is this and that when it comes to the all NBA defensive stuff. And yeah, he got a couple reputation ones there at the tail end, but he was also a madman for the vast majority of his career as a defensive player. And that to me is the part of this that I feel like people always tend to ignore. Like I see the big push right now for Steph to be put ahead of Kobe in these all-time rankings. And it's like, I get it in terms of the evolution of the sport and the concept of spacing and the offensive weapon that he was, but he never ever defended the other team's best player ever. And I don't know why it tends to be forgotten or overlooked, that part of it specifically with Kobe.
Yeah. You know, I think it even extends beyond defense to just him fighting for a key contested rebound or just in general, his brain, his mind for the game. I think the efficiency stuff, one of the big things in general with tough shot makers over the years is we hyper-focus on efficiency when the reality is that a lot of times in a big playoff moment at the end of a game, you kind of just need a guy who can get his own shot. And yeah, that can be more reliable than many of the other options on the table. The most recent example I can think of is the Serbia-USA game when it's like, okay, LeBron did his thing, the transition attacks, and Steph did his thing, hitting the three, the couple threes that he hit, and Joel Embiid hit a couple tough middies over Jokic. But then all of a sudden, it's like Serbia just kept scoring, and it was like, man, we need a bucket. KD, you do it. And then everyone went and stood over there, and KD was able
Kobe
to
in the
to
gold medal game his too, own shot. Remember,
Kobe in the gold medal game is a great example. And so, like, to me, a lot of times, it's about being able to hit the shot, not necessarily 47% from two and 38% from three in order to do that. And that's the thing. There are a lot of guys in the NBA that James Harden is a great example, who's been able to kind of like maximize modern efficiency in terms of just where he's taking his shots from and taking them out of certain types of coverages where there's openings, but then in a playoff series, when a team starts switching and everything bogs down, all of a sudden he can't like get to his spot the way that the greats could at that specific position. And so I think that kind of colors some of the efficiency part of it. The defense and rebounding we talked about, that also manifests in terms of leadership. Like when your best player is guarding the other team's best player and competing for every rebound and just in general caring about all those details, it becomes impossible for the guys down the roster to do so. And like for instance, LeBron in the prime of his career was one of the best defenders in the world. And consistently, I think LeBron was the best player from about 2012 to 2020. And in that span, he was pretty consistent on that end of the floor. But there have been stretches in with the Lakers where LeBron, towards the end, and one thing I'll say in his defense is I don't think these teams thought they could win the title. So I think a mentally engaged LeBron that sees the trophy is different than a LeBron who's like, we're a third tier team, and so what's the point?
He played, you know what I mean? 47 and a half minutes against Jokic in that Western Conference Finals game and guarded him. So like when he was engaged, he could do it, but there wasn't enough reason to be engaged consistently enough the last few years.
Yes, and it did manifest in some of the sloppiness down the roster, because like if the leader's not doing it, why are we going to do it? You know what I mean? And even down the stretch of Kobe's career, I'm sure there were similar effects like that, where when he wasn't as engaged defensively, it manifested down the roster. But within those seasons, like, you know, I always talk about it with LeBron, like even to this day, like if you go back to the late prime, like 2020 to 2022, if you had a team that you knew could win the title, that was a legitimate top-tier contender, there was no better guy in the league to have leading it from a mental standpoint than LeBron, because he knew all the checkpoints you had to hit along the way, and those checkpoints matter. Like with Shaq, when Shaq, in his comments, when he was like saying, like, I would have got a couple with T-Mac, I would have got a couple with Vince. It's like, first of all theoretical. It's like, what does that even mean? Like, I don't know what any of that means, but there are some substantial differences between Kobe and T-Mac and Kobe and Vince in terms of their just their give a shit and their leadership capability. Yeah. And in a lot of ways, Kobe was making up for Shaq's deficits on those fronts. Mm-hmm. And so I think when I look at Kobe, I don't ever like synthesizing things down to rings, but I do think that it's not a coincidence that he got five. And I think that When I'm looking at that top tier, the LeBron, Michael, Kobe, that three in particular, it's apex competition. It's apex like savage competitor behavior that manifests in down the roster buy-in in a way that even extends beyond what they do on the court.
Why do you think there's such a gap between the way that his peers and the guys that follow him talk about Kobe compared to your typical hashtag content creator? Like why is there such a gap there? Do you think it's a stubbornness thing? Cause it's wild to me how many people just listen to how many former players, guys who competed against Kobe, guys who watch Kobe, all that stuff, just say, yeah, he's top five, he's top three, he's this, he's that. And then, you know, we get, you know, a lot more analytically inclined people saying like, well, technically this is like the 13 to 15 range. Like I'm trying to figure out why there, I can understand there being a discrepancy. I don't understand why it's so wide.
I think it's a combination of things. I think part of it is some of the aesthetics. Like I think, you know, for people who have played a lot of basketball, you see Kobe's tough shot making and you have this profound appreciation for the work. You know, like you have any idea how much you have to work on footwork and lift and release and left shoulder and right shoulder fades.
It's like when I see skateboarders, right? I'm like, dude, I know how much time and you felt you spent on the ground learning to do that shit. like I know how difficult it took to learn that shit. So yeah, I get it.
Yeah, exactly. And so like I think for basketball players, there's a profound appreciation for the work that Kobe put in to become the scorer that he was. I think for people that are disconnected from the game in terms of like playing experience, it becomes a lot of like, this is ugly. It's hero ball. He's jacking up bad shots and blah, blah, blah. And they can't, like, that's why those guys always gear towards the classic advantage creators. And I don't necessarily blame them. Like, look, Jokic does play beautiful basketball. So does Steph. So does Tyrese Haliburton. He's like, LeBron is an example of this. These guys that, like, are just the wonderful ball moving, you know, pass first types of guys. Those guys have a certain aesthetic appeal that is more, you know, that kind of transcends into the casual basketball fan base. But I think the scoring archetypes, like, let's call a spade. Kobe played ugly basketball sometimes. He did.
Yeah.
And it was pretty for the guys who appreciate the skill, but he did play ugly basketball sometimes and it worked and I believed in it. But, and it was, that was the whole thing is like with Kobe and the Lakers is like, you're playing two bigs, you're defending at a super high level and Kobe's carrying you home with this surgical shot making from these different spots on the floor, but it wasn't the prettiest basketball all the time. But the same thing could have been said about MJ. If you remember before MJ was winning, there was a lot of criticism about him being a ball hog. And so like, I think in general, the ball hog kind of thing just stuck to him and it caused a lot of people to not appreciate what he did.
Yeah. I also feel like, I don't know. Kobe to me was so competitive that if he saw, like, if he came along 10, 15 years later and he saw that a potential advantage could be gained by being more efficient, by taking different shots, by perfecting different spots on the court, or understanding different passes that he needs to keep awake, you know, keep available for himself, I feel like he would have done that stuff, you know, like that kind of goes back to the rings argument. You know, if you show that you are willing to do whatever it takes to win five championships, I'm willing to give you the benefit of the doubt when it comes to whatever it would take to win at that level in a different era. So, and but all of this shit's hypothetical. So that's where we find ourselves. All right. We have one super comment here and then we'll go ahead and get out of here, but we have to play the most important clip on the show. So, all right, Greenlight Transport writes, bring Austin off the bench to lead the second unit. So I guess I'll make the case for Austin coming off of the bench, seeing as I think we both agree that Rui should be the one coming off of the bench, but I guess I'll try to make the case for Austin in that right now your engines for the second unit are Gabe Vincent and Rui Hachimura. And now I'm not going to counter myself because, you know, this isn't debate class or whatever, but like, it's like, if you start Austin and Luka and LeBron, there might be a bit of a lull before you get back to starters making their ways back onto the court. And I guess theoretically, if Austin is starting on the bench, you maintain that punch at all times, basically. Is that worth it? Or do you agree with the sentiment? Is that worth the fit concerns there, though, with having somebody at your point of attack and then also not having somebody to defend wings? Where do you stand on that stuff?
Yeah, that's really it. It's like Rui, LeBron, DeAndre, and Luka, none of those four guys can guard on the perimeter at a high level. So like Austin, for all the criticism, again, and I think the majority of the criticism levied towards Austin has to do with the fact that he was slotted inappropriately. Like we talked about earlier with like a potential, like a theoretical Warriors matchup. Austin, you need him out there as that second perimeter defender alongside Marcus Smart. And as far as like leading the second unit, it's like you've got three really good shot creators. You're going to stagger them. Like LeBron's going to check out of the game and Luka and Austin will lead the late first quarter group. And then Luka's going to check out of the game and then there'll be a brief LeBron and Austin stretch and then Austin will get a rest and then Luka will come back in. And like they're going to be staggered in a way that it's not going to be an issue, you know? And so I like, in terms of like Austin having opportunities to really have the ball in his hands, like it's just going to happen. It's going to happen because of the way that they're staggered. And so to me, it's more actually about the defensive slotting, and you need Austin as another perimeter defender in that group.
I think he's really underrated as a defender when he's your second best defender.
Yep.
Like we saw it with Max. when Max was swapped in there for D'Angelo Russell, all of a sudden it was like, oh shit, Austin is actually okay if he's not defending De'Aaron Fox. Look at that. You know, like, and I think we'll probably find that out all over again this year. But Jason, as always, this has been a blast. Congratulations on the really successful year that you guys had with Hoops Tonight and with the volume. Bummer, I didn't run into you there in Vegas. I was in and out of there. I even cut my trip a day short. I was like, I was supposed to leave Monday night, and then it was Sunday night, and I was like, nope, I can't do another day here. My body will not hold up. So unfortunately, I'm bummed that I didn't run into you there, but congratulations on all the success. Anything that you want to plug before we get you out of here?
No, just go head over to the Hoops Tonight channel and subscribe. Yeah, Vegas, I think I've been there 6 times in the last like 36 months, and I hope like I could use a break. I because I went a couple extra times for the Dead and Company shows at the Sphere. Mm-hmm. And like you know, I will say one thing I really appreciate about Vegas is really good food there. And I always eat really well when I'm there, but it's just like it's tough, and then like the constant in and out from blazing heat to like crazy air conditioner with like oxygen being like pumped into the room to like going back out into the heat, and now you're getting in an Uber and it's blasting AC on you, and it's just like the wild oscillations in temperature, and the Uber process itself is stressful. Like I do enjoy summer league, but yeah, like it to me it's like 2 days tops and then I'm like I gotta get out of there. But it was good to be on, man. It was good to see you. I'm very, very excited about this Lakers team this year. It's going to be a fun one. I was literally just looking at the calendar. We're less than 3 months away from the season opener. So, like, I mean, we're going to get to see these guys play. I especially can't wait to watch Ayton with Luka. I think he's going to I think those two are going to cut the league up in a lot of ways. So it's going to be fun, man. And it was good to be on, and I'm looking forward to next time.
Yeah, I'm probably about as high. I'm at dangerous levels of high on DeAndre Ayton, which is how he wound up with his contract in the first place, because somebody else was dangerously high on DeAndre Ayton, but he didn't have Luka back then. So I think it'll be pretty good. But
after the extension, I don't want anything to do with it. But for this year.
Yeah.
Let's go, DeAndre. We got this, buddy.
Just find a way to keep DeAndre Ayton at contract, like contract year DeAndre Ayton. If you could always have him in contract years, that'd be great in any way, shape, or form. But I don't know if they'll be able to do that. But yeah, thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Hit that like button. Hit that subscribe button. Hit that share button as well. Until the next time you guys hear from us, I'm Anthony Irwin. That was Jason Timpf. This has been the Lakers Lounge. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. And I will talk to you when I talk to you.